This is Word on the Streets, a podcast about the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project. This podcast is created by the City of Midland, Michigan, and produced by the MCTV Network. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of Word on the Streets, a podcast about information, updates, and perspective on the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project in Midland, Michigan. I'm your host, Katie Geyer, here again with my co-host, Grant Marshall. Welcome, Grant.
Hey, Katie. How are you?
Doing great. We're back with you after a little bit of a hiatus as we got through the end of summer, but we are here and we have some updates on what's going on in the corridor and some things that we've been working on with MDOT. So, Grant, I think it would be remiss of us if we did not talk about what's been going on in the corridor the last couple of months. We have seen a number of accidents in this corridor, and actually this feeds well into what we're going to talk about later on today in the context of today's topic, which is pedestrian safety and mobility. So I feel like we should discuss some of what we've seen in the last couple of months. I have in front of me a report we're going to talk about. Let's go over kind of what we're looking at and some of the trends that we've seen, especially over the summer, both on Indian and on Buttles. So what are we looking at here, Grant?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Katie, accidents or traffic crashes, we've seen a number of them, particularly through this last part of the summer. But that's not anything new. We have had a number of car accidents and crashes through this stretch of the city for quite a few years, and some that have been a little bit more dramatic in nature in the last 3 years. So some of the things that we've been seeing through this, and if I can just touch on some of the highlights overall, both looking at Indian Street and Buttle Street, as well as the cross streets that intersect through that corridor as well. In total, looking back to 2019, we did have 107 crashes on Indian Street and 120 on Buttle Street during that time. Those included property damage crashes, personal injury crashes, as well as some hit-and-run crashes that took place, too. We talked about this during our long info sessions previously, as well as some of the short videos that we did back in 2019. But the crash data information is something that's obtained by law enforcement at the scene of the crash. It's then put into a report, a police report, that then is ultimately input into the overall system that the state of Michigan has on traffic crashes. And so that's the type of information that we're pulling from, is really information collected by law enforcement on the scene that was provided and then has been made part of the overall record for this corridor.
Okay. So if we look at this, it says that this was pulled from 2019 until September 1st of 2021. But for those of you that remember going through the lane reduction trial, that's actually just spanned from May of 2018 to December of 2019. So anything from, let's say, January of 2020 on would have occurred once the roadway returned to its original three-lane profile. Is that fair?
That is fair to say. Okay. Yes. And again, remember that we just did the trial on Buttle Street. Mm-hmm. So Indian has always been three lanes throughout this entire time.
Correct. So let's take a look at these. In 2021 alone, we've seen 18 crashes on Indian from Jerome to State, which is where we did that lane reduction trial on Buttles, and 22 crashes on Buttles to date, which if we look at September 1st as the end date of these reports, we've still got another 3 months. And as we know, Michigan weather, there's the potential for snow really from almost October on. So we do have the potential for some severe weather to potentially really increase that number as well. And it looks like 10 of those were injury accidents. If we look at these, there are some of these that are occurring in relatively the same area. I know Ashman and Indian has seen a few accidents in the last couple of months, particularly vehicles leaving the roadway and striking, whether it's, you know, some landscaping in the area. I think we had some private property that was damaged as a result of at least one of those accidents. And some of these are even occurring on the same day or within the same week. What do you make of all of that?
So we do know in these particular cases that speed has been an issue. We've seen in some witnesses of some of these crashes that there's been vehicles that are turning from the wrong lanes and crossing lanes that are travel lanes adjacent to them. And that's something that I know we discussed in great detail when we did have that trial on Buttle Street for those few months. That we did see some people that were improperly turning from the center lane and crossing a lane to get to where they wanted to go. So we're still seeing that on both Buttles and Indian at different times. One thing that I know we're seeing just across the map, even countrywide, is increases of distracted driving. And that's something that we have to be paying particular attention to, because when you're in your vehicle and you're driving, you are a very dangerous thing, flying down the road at even 25 miles an hour, 35 miles an hour, 45 miles an hour. And so going off the road, leaving the roadway, you do pose a very big risk for people, bicyclists, and certainly personal property, like landscaping and even that dumpster enclosure that was struck a couple of weeks back at Ashman and Indian. All of those become a reality when you're moving as quickly as a lot of these vehicles do move through this corridor.
Sure. And I think that's important, again, to talk about is people can think, well, 35 feels so slow going through a three-lane corridor. When you think about the weight of a vehicle and how much damage it can do, essentially going as slow as we want to say as 25 to 35 miles per hour, it really becomes dangerous, especially when you are encountering non-motorized users in that corridor. We've said it before and we'll probably say it about 100, maybe 1,000 more times over the course of this podcast, but one of the benefits of traffic calming measures like lane reductions is that it slows people down. Mm-hmm. The slower we can get those cars to move through there, the more uncomfortable drivers feel, as we've talked about before, the more likely they are to drive with caution and be a lot more aware of what's going on around them, which makes everybody safe, other motorists, as well as pedestrians, non-motorized users, and people that live along that corridor, have businesses along that corridor that want their property to be safe as well. Correct. So it's really important for us to consider.
It really is. And I think along those same lines, the goal really is traffic calming. We want people to drive an appropriate speed and behave in an appropriate manner for a downtown context. Because at the end of the day, we are trying to make it a livable district where we do have people that can walk and bike and feel safe doing so. We also want motorists to be able to feel safe. We get that people are wanting to get quickly to where they want to be. And I know we live in a very fast-paced society where we're constantly trying to pack in a lot and get from place to place as quickly as we can. Right. And that usually results in people exceeding the speed limit or driving not very cautiously in order to try and obtain that. But here in downtown Midland, it's a place where we want everyone to be safe and build a spot for people. And in order to do that, you do have to slow the cars down.
Sure. And if you think about what a downtown district really functions as to really thrive, there has to be a balance between people coming and going through that corridor in a vehicle, as well as fostering people being able to be safe to move about the corridor in different ways. And that actually segues really well into what we were going to talk about today, which is pedestrian and non-motorized safety. So speaking of that, one of the keys that we've wanted to address through this corridor is improving how comfortable pedestrians and non-motorized users like bicyclists, people on mobility devices, strollers, wagons, all that stuff, how they feel as they're going through the corridor. And I understand we have been working with MDOT a little bit on addressing some of those issues. So tell me what we've been talking about.
Yeah, so in the preliminary design work that MDOT does, one of the particular things they pay attention to as part of the context-sensitive design solutions is pedestrian counts and the pedestrian crossings that are on the streets in the corridor that you're working in. And so we've had a number of conversations with MDOT and their design consultants, plus also staffers at MDOT that are working as project managers on this particular project. We've talked largely about the need to think about where in the corridor, both on Indian and Ashman, or in Indian and Buttles, do we want pedestrians to be able to cross either in an improved way from where they are today, or a new crossing that doesn't exist currently. If you drive down Indian, for example, it's not until you get to Rod and Ashman when you're coming from State Street side that you actually see a formal crosswalk across Indian, which is very interesting because we have crosswalks on all of those streets to provide a safe place for people to walk next to the street. But crossing that into the block in between Indian and Buttles, and then again crossing Buttles into more of the downtown proper area, there's very little options as a pedestrian until you get to the signalized intersections of Rod and Ashman. And some people may say, well, that's where pedestrians should cross. That is where the signals are at, and that's the safest place for them. Which, you know, there is an argument to be made about that. It is much safer to do that. However, we're now asking someone to walk 5-6 blocks down from maybe where their house is at. Say if they want to go from Indian and State to a Loons game, they would have to walk all the way over to Rod or Cronkite and then cross and then walk all the way back through. And at that point, it becomes a question of just convenience. And so are people really going to do that, wanting to walk? Very few people would actually do that. Most people would probably say, wow, that's going to take me about 15, 20 minutes. I'd rather get my car and drive and feel more safe.
And that's not what we want them doing. We want them to be walking. And I like that you brought that up because we've heard that argument quite a bit. Well, why don't pedestrians just cross where there's already, you know, crosswalk? There are signalized crosswalk lights at some of those intersections with Ashman and Rod in particular. But we don't take that same approach, or at least we haven't historically, when we design for cars. If you drive through, let's say, the Saginaw Road Corridor right now, which we're getting ready to start a really exciting non-motorized focused streetscape project on, there is a driveway in and out of every single business all the way along that corridor. Mm-hmm. And that's the approach that we're hoping to get for some of these pedestrians. We don't make motorists go to one designated spot to pull in and out because it's safer. We're hoping to get to that point now,
right.
Because it is a lot safer for pedestrians and motorists to do that. But for pedestrians to have the ability to cross what's more natural for them and keeps them as safe as possible, mm-hmm. I think it makes perfect sense to give them more opportunities to cross where they're actually living, where they're actually getting to where they need to go, and cutting down their commute time as much as possible, mm-hmm. so that we're keeping them safe. We don't want them crossing a bunch of roadways if they don't have to.
No, we don't. And when we've heard from people in that neighborhood, that's the thing that they've talked about, is they want logical and easy ways to get from point A to point B in downtown. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to create very logical and straightforward, at quick as possible ways from point A to point B, most people won't walk or they won't bike because they're doing it for utility purpose. They're trying to get from place to place. And we talked earlier in the podcast about how everyone wants to get to where they are going as quick as possible.
Right.
So you have to create those logical connections in order for it to foster the right kind of pedestrian environment.
Sure.
But you bring up a really good point about just how we have a very different approach to both car design and pedestrian design, because part of the conversation we're having with MDOT is we would like to see more crosswalks happening in that corridor. And initial responses back to us has been, well, we need to have traffic, or we need to have pedestrian warrants and numbers high enough that are going to warrant specific types of intersection design or crosswalks and the like, which is kind of unique to say, because that's like saying, well, we're not seeing a lot of pedestrians there right now, therefore we can't plan for them because they're not currently crossing.
Right.
It's like, well, the corridor is not designed for them very well, so of course they're not going to cross. If we applied that same logic to vehicles, we would never say, hey, we should put a street through that field. In a similar way, if we were to say, well, there are no cars that drive through that field today, we can't put a street there.
Right.
It's the same type of thought process, I guess, that's a little bit different when we think about it from a pedestrian focus. So that's one of the pieces that the city's really advocated for in these meetings, is saying, no, we do have a future vision for our downtown, and we do want to see more safety provided to pedestrians and bicyclists and those using mobility devices of all ages. And that is what we want to be a very high priority. And in order to do that, we are going to need to enhance and add some new connections through the corridor.
Sure. If you build it, they will come. People want to walk and bike, and we're continuing to see that shift. But like you said, mm-hmm. if it doesn't feel safe and it's not logical, you know, we're pretty, for the most part, logical beings as humans. And if it's not making sense or it feels unsafe, we're not going to do it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing some of this. So let's talk about how we are planning some of these corridors and kind of what we've talked about with MDOT. We're going to start by taking a look at the western segment of both Indian and Buttles, which run from Jerome Street to State Street. And we have aerial maps of these corridors. They have marks at different intersections. The proposed new crosswalks that we have proposed are in orange, and the enhanced crosswalks are in green. If you're listening to us on audio only, you can find these maps on the podcast website at cityofmidlandmi.gov/corridors. So, like we kind of talked about earlier, there are a few signalized intersections that have crosswalks on both Buttles and Indian, but they're mostly at some of those larger intersections like Rod and Ashman and McDonald. And those areas also right now have traffic signals for vehicles. So it looks like from looking at this map, the city is asking for new crosswalks at Buttles and Fitzhugh, and on Indian at Haley, State, Cronkite, and Fitzhugh. So let's talk about, since there's not technically crosswalks at those locations right now, what does that look like if a new one were to be installed?
Mm-hmm. So probably our best example of a non-traffic signalized crosswalk is right at Buttles and State. So we have the non-motorized path that comes through the one-way pairs from the west, through the east, and then connects right in front of Dow Diamond by the new East End building, mm-hmm. Right at the intersection of Buttles and State Street. So there is an enhanced crosswalk that's there. There's some yellow signs that say pedestrian, and then you have the painted crosswalk on the pavement. And we see a lot of people crossing there. One of our highest crossings as it relates to just simple counts right now because of the non-motorized connectivity and the paths that have been designed and installed in those particular areas. So that is something that we could see in those other areas. Now, MDOT's going to have to bless these locations we've asked for, but that would be a good example. Another example of something that already exists at a non-signalized intersection is actually the crossing at Ellsworth at Jerome.
Okay.
Which is not necessarily Ellsworth because it's cut off by City Hall and then they have a parking lot on the other side. Mm-hmm. But maybe what we think of as the way to get to Subway from downtown.
We are very familiar with the Subway at City Hall.
Correct. But that is an example of a crosswalk that does exist in between actual signalized traffic intersections. And these are important pieces to have, and they're common in downtown areas across all over Michigan. I mean, mm-hmm. we see these in Lansing and East Lansing. We see them in Ann Arbor. We see them in Grand Rapids and Holland. It's not uncommon for communities to want these types of crosswalks and for people to be able to utilize them and for people to really recognize where pedestrians should be crossing in a safe way and where it's open for vehicles to continue to travel through. And that is part of what the discussion will be back and forth with MDOT on this, is how can we get to the right kind of compromise and be able to build that infrastructure for pedestrians so that there's a multitude of ways to be able to easily access downtown through safe connections from that midtown neighborhood into downtown proper.
Sure. I like that you brought that up because I think it's important that motorists can anticipate seeing pedestrians at those intersections, because right now, if you drive through there, like you said, it's not really marked. If we have pavement markings and signage, people can say, okay, there's a potential for a pedestrian to be within that crosswalk or to be waiting to cross that crosswalk. Obviously, we don't want motorists to be stopping in the middle of the roadway to let them across, but just to be cognizant that if they are crossing already, that they need to be mm-hmm. to be aware. Whereas
They don't. And I'd actually argue that we should have motorists that are slowing down for pedestrians, because it is state law that motorists stop for pedestrians that are in crosswalks.
Yes.
And that's part of the culture that's needed in order to foster a really good pedestrian environment, is when you have motorists that behave correctly and understand when they're in a downtown environment that they do need to stop, because it's impractical for that person to stand there for minutes or seconds or minutes on end waiting for a proper crossing in order for them to jut through and run across. That's not the kind of environment we're trying to create, which isn't going to reinforce that safety for them, and certainly not going to encourage them to do that type of connection or walking experience if they have maybe kids with them or their parents or elderly people. We do need cars to stop at the right times.
Sure. So if we look at this map, it looks to me like there are new crosswalks proposed in some pretty strategic areas. So what about these intersections in particular said to city staff, you know, we need some pedestrian crossing capabilities in these areas?
Yeah, so if I can talk specifically about the ones, let's start at the of this segment, the west segment in the southeast, down by Dow Diamond. So okay. At Haley Street, we have lots of people that do park in the neighborhood and do walk over to Dow Diamond and Great Lakes Loons games. Mm-hmm. But we also have just a lot of people that do tend to use that as a a corridor for walking in and out of downtown from the neighborhood. So that's one that we've requested, largely two, because it connects into that non-motorized path between the one-way pairs. Mm-hmm. If you get down to State Street, it's the same type of idea. We have that enhanced crosswalk at State and Buttles, but we don't have a crosswalk currently at Indian and State.
That's right, yep.
And so it's wanting to make a proper connection for the end of that pathway or beginning of that pathway into that neighborhood area. That's similar with Cronkite. Cronkite is a signalized, or it's not a signalized intersection on Indian, but we do see a lot of people walking through there because, of course, there's a lot of residential in the blocks of Grove and Pine Street that do connect in and out of downtown through there.
Yeah.
And that's similar thought process as you get to Fitzhugh. But one thing I do want to point out is in planning for all of this, we have to think about context and what's been designed previously. Mm-hmm. And there's a very nice urban sequence that's been developed over the years between the county courthouse, where the city hall and county services building are located, and that pedestrian access point that's all centered around Fitzhugh Street.
Okay.
If you look down, if you stand at the front of City Hall in the little courtyard between City Hall and the county services building, and you look down Fitzhugh towards the county courthouse, it's nicely framed at the end of that street. And that was very intentional.
Yeah.
It was something that urban planners did years ago. And continuing that pedestrian connection is something that the city's wanting to do across Indian and Buttles as it connects to Fitzhugh and across Indian and then into the Midtown neighborhood there. Of course, we do have a lot of residential, new residential and existing residential that's been there for a number of years through that whole area, and we want them to have a safe way to access into downtown without having to go too far out of their way.
Sure, and I think it's important to point out as well that we've now got some higher education going to be downtown as well. We've got Delta College now in that block off of Ellsworth, and you know, we are going to have people wanting to walk if they're going to school from, say, they live in Midtown or even they live in Center City and they want to walk or bike to school. We would love the opportunity for them to do that instead of driving a couple of miles, you know. So
that's a very good point.
Facilitating some additional non-motorized transportation to get to places that it makes sense, like, for example, Delta College, Northwood, you know, those types of places, in addition to just retail, restaurants, and some of the other downtown amenities, make a lot of sense to make non-motorized transportation much easier to do.
No, that's a very good point. I mean, this is our most evolved kind of 15-minute city, if you will, and that's a planning term that's been talked about extensively in the last few years. But that's how do you meet or have an ability to meet 85, 95, 100% of your daily needs in a 15-minute walk from your house. And that's what we're really wanting to offer people, an opportunity in Midland to be able to live someplace that does allow them to walk quickly to get to where they work or where they go for school and be able to walk back and do that all in a very safe area. What we have designed currently really is a big barrier for that. Where a big pocket of residential is in Midtown, it's very much divided from the assets that we have in downtown and vice versa because of the way that Indian and Buttles are designed.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about what enhanced crosswalks look like, because we got a couple of those as well.
We do. And so we've noted those at the subway crossing, if you will, on Jerome at Ellsworth.
Yep.
We've also noted that at the intersection of State Street and Buttles Street as well. And enhanced is something that there's a bit of variety that MDOT can do when it comes to looking at how you do some enhancements on that. And some enhanced pedestrian crosswalks, I guess, examples that we have across the city are like the Hawk signals that we have in front of some elementary schools, including Central Park Elementary. It's likely that that's not the type of enhancement that we're going to be talking about, largely because that's an activated one that does stop traffic.
Right.
it's really just making notice of it being a crosswalk and then possibility something that could be activated through the flashing beacons or something like that. Those are examples of things that we could ultimately see in these cases. But that will be up to MDOT's design. But the city has asked for those to be enhanced for a number of reasons. One is because we do see a lot of usage of those two crosswalks. And it's a bit dangerous. If you've ever gone from City Hall to Subway or tried to cross through there, it's a bit nerve-wracking in order to cross because people do not stop. Even if you are in the crosswalk, they don't abide by state law and stop for you. We would like to see that changed. We'd like people to be more mindful of that and for that to be a safer connection. And that's the same at State and Buttles. We do want that to be a big part of our non-motorized system within our community. It's also going to be the new location, hopefully. We're proposing to change the U.S. Bicycle Route 20 route to take the non-motorized path through the one-way pairs, and that would be the crossing of Buttles right at State Street. And so for people visiting the community on that bicycle route, or for those that are doing more long touring bike rides, we want it to be safe for them to get through there and into our downtown.
Sure, sure. So in addition to, you know, whatever MDOT decides looks best for this corridor in terms of an enhanced sidewalk, what other types of things are we considering within the design? Are we considering some additional lighting options, other things that are going to make non-motorized users a lot safer throughout the corridor?
We are starting to talk more about that. We're not as far along in that conversation. We've really focused a lot on these crossings so far. Mm-hmm. But some of the things we have discussed to date include mast arms of the actual traffic signals. If you can create a massing through those physical steel or metal mast arms at the intersections, that does provide a more formality to the corridor, and that does tend to mean that there's pedestrians that are going to be in that area. Mm-hmm. Some other things we've looked at include having more consistent types of lighting through there, and that's something that we're going back and forth with MDOT on currently. But we're also wanting to do simply just a different signage, I think, is another thing that would be part of the enhancement, but more intentionality around that signage to really delineate where those crossings could be. So it's a big package of all of those things, right. But each of them, if you add them on together, really does create a better experience.
Okay. So let's go back to what we talked about at the beginning of the episode. A lot of the crashes that we're seeing occur at major intersections like Rod and Ashman and Jerome, but we've already got signalized non-motorized crosswalks there. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at additional ways to make those existing pedestrian crossings safer? Is there anything we can do to make them safer? Are they about as beefed up as you can get, if you will? Mm-hmm. Have we talked about that with MDOT, and what does that really look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we are in ongoing conversations with them about those particular intersections. Some of the things that they've suggested back to us so far have been enhanced painting on the roadway to know which lane is a turning lane, which lane is a straight lane. For example, right at the intersection of Indian and Ashman, knowing that center lane is not a left turn lane like it is at Jerome, mm-hmm. But continuing on. So enhanced pavement markings does improve that. Also being more intentional about the painting and striping that we're doing for those crosswalks. Could we be doing a little bit thicker of a stripe like we have at State and Buttles? Could that be something that we do at those other intersections? I think it's important too to recognize that as part of creating more of a placemaking led initiative, there could be ways that we look at actually creating more identities of those intersections, because when you do drive through, especially on Indian, a lot of those intersections look very similar.
Yes, they do.
And so if you're not very familiar with downtown, you can think, okay, am I turning left here at Ashman, or am I supposed to turn left here at Jerome, or how do I get to M20? You know, those kind of things. And it's all a very similar type of style of where you have residential on the right and you have a collection of office space on the left. And so how we think about those particular intersections, there could be opportunity for either better signage of the streets themselves or doing more intentionality around placemaking to delineate those points and how you get into downtown. So that's part of what we're looking at with MTOP, but I think one of the soonest things that we would see would be actually just enhanced pavement markings.
That's a good point. We have lots of one ways beyond just these. You know, for example, we have Ashman and Rod as one ways. And if you're not familiar with the area, but you maybe have driven through once or twice, or you get a little stir crazy with your GPS and don't know where you're going, it's absolutely possible. We see it all the time for motorists to go the wrong way down one of those one ways. And that just not only increases the likelihood of a crash with a non-motorized user or a pedestrian, but with another vehicle as well. So I'm interested to see what MDOT comes up with in terms of increased signage for that.
Yeah.
So we're going to stop here and take a quick break. But remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on your preferred podcast platform of choice, or you can watch us on the City of Midland's YouTube channel every month. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Word on the Streets. In the first segment, we talked about the west end of the Buttles and Indian Corridor and the pedestrian crossing enhancements that the City of Midland has proposed to include in the Buttles Street redesign. But that section of road is actually part of a much larger corridor under MDOT jurisdiction that spans all the way to Washington Street. So if you're familiar with Midland, you know from Pine east to Washington, Indian Street is East Patrick Road, and Buttles is called Lion Road. We want to make that distinction before we get any further into the podcast in case you're unfamiliar. These are the same roadways, just in different sections of the community. But that is not the only thing that's different about these sections of roadway, is it?
No, it's not. No, in fact, you actually go from a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit to 45 miles an hour as you go through the curves and eventually become Patrick and Lion towards the east. This is important to note because a lot of times by the time you get to the 45-mile-an-hour speed limit signs, people are already accelerating to get to that speed limit, and so you do have blocks on Buttles in particular, say from George to State, where people are accelerating in order to get that 45 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we saw that actually, I believe, when we did the speed counts, when we did the lane reduction trial on Buttles. And if you want to see the metrics that we collected for crashes as well as speed data during that study, you can go to cityofmidlandmi.gov/road study. Like we said earlier, we won't be covering those in any more detail. We went pretty extensively into those back when the road diet trial was underway, so you can check those out there. So let's take a look at the corridors from Pine east to Washington on both Patrick and Lion. Yeah. Why, Grant, let's start here. Why did we decide to include this segment in these requests to MDOT?
Sure. So again, you mentioned that this is part of a full project. So this entire construction project and road design is not just Indian and Buttles, but it includes these segments of Patrick and Lion. So it's important that we wanted to look holistically at the pedestrian crossings for this entire corridor. So that's why we talked about the crossing for Subway, if you will, at Jerome. But we also have requests in to do some enhancement at both Patrick and Lion roads. It's actually just really Patrick that we're wanting to make some pedestrian connections to, because we do have some connections at Lion Road. But largely the thing that we're wanting to connect the residential neighborhoods that exist on the north and northwest sides of Patrick are to that non-motorized pathway in between the one-way pairs. For many years, the city has made lots of investments collaborative with the Community Foundation in order to make this such a nice green belt. We've added this pedestrian pathway and non-motorized pathway through there. And really what we're finding is that there's not a lot of people that use it on existing or in adjacent neighborhoods because, again, that barrier that the three lanes and fast-moving traffic provides. And so our requests are actually to enhance the crosswalk at East Pine Street and Patrick, and then also at East Patrick and Bayless Street. We wanted Bayless Street in particular because Bayless is actually a part of our non-motorized transportation designated streets. It is a bike route. There we go. That's
okay,
the word.
Yeah.
and so that's something that we do see a lot of bicyclists take in order to get not only south of Lyon, but also to connect into that path between the one-way pairs.
Sure.
Yeah, so that is our point of requested new signal, or not signals, but rather new pedestrian and crosswalks, and something that possibly could be enhanced depending on what MDOT is able to do on those sections.
Sure. So we're anticipating that at the very minimum, we're hoping these will look a lot like some of the new proposed crosswalks, like at Buttles and Fitzhugh, for example,
exactly.
Where it's not probably going to be a full signalized type of crosswalk, but it is going to be enhanced to the point where people now will hopefully expect to see pedestrians and make that a lot safer, especially given that, like you said, cars are now going 45 miles per hour through here, and that completely changes the outlook of, you know, a pedestrian crossing, three lanes of traffic going another 10 miles per hour plus, probably, faster than they are further down once it turns into Buttles and Indian Street.
Right.
So this makes sense to me because we have a lot of residential, like you said, especially some of these older neighborhoods to the north. But on the south side, it's mostly industrial, commercial businesses that you probably wouldn't have a lot of pedestrian traffic into. So it makes sense to me, looking at this, that we wouldn't want to enhance beyond what we already have anything that's on Lion Street.
And that's a good point. We do already have those existing crosswalks that are both at Bayless and at Jefferson.
Right.
And so there is some connection already in some existing crosswalks to get you across Lion. And the city is simply saying we don't think there's anything further needed on Lion.
Sure. So obviously these pedestrian enhancements are not going to be part of the two-lane redesign potentially that we're going to see in a few years when we kick off the Buttles Street project. Do we have a timeline for when we would expect to see some enhancements in some of these other areas, either on Indian or on Patrick and Lyon, or is this more kind of like a comprehensive wish list right now?
Yeah, I'd say it's more of the comprehensive wish list idea, where we're wanting to make sure that our we're advocating for the things that we heard about and we know to be things that the city wants to pursue in our downtown. We're simply wanting to make sure that those are baked in as part of the full design. And when MDOT does go forward to do the reconstruction, that it would be part of the design that would get done at that time. And so, of course, we don't have a timeline on when the reconstruction would take place, so we don't know when these enhancements would also happen. But we do want to make sure that they're included as part of the design.
Sure, makes sense. So speaking of timeline, I know we have people that are really excited to hear what the next key date or next key opportunity for us to hear some more about the Buttles Street redesign. What's the status of that project right now, and do we know yet when we're going to see some potential initial designs for that?
Yeah, so at this point we don't have an understanding as to when there'd be preliminary designs or something else that would go out for a public input meeting. Mm-hmm. MDOT is still continuing to work on it. I can say that we do have good communication back and forth with their project managers on this. And they also have a series of work that's being done by a consultant in order to provide things like those pedestrian counts and other metrics to be part of the conversation as it relates to the overall design. So it's a lot of preliminary work that mm-hmm. happens in the design process right now. Once you have all that preliminary work completed, you then can have preliminary design drawings that can go out for public comment. And that's what our next thing would be for the public to be able to engage on.
Sure. Well, I think it's exciting that we are having conversations about these kinds of things, because that means, you know, even though people aren't seeing anything happen yet, it's kind of behind the scenes, we are having those conversations and we're moving the ball forward on this project. And this is just one of those small pieces of the overall puzzle that need to be addressed before we can have a preliminary design that we can get some valuable feedback on. So mm-hmm. really exciting to see this stuff kind of starting to take shape. So that's all for this installment, but we'll be back next month with another episode and more updates on the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project. See you soon, and slow down. This has been Word on the Streets, a podcast created by the City of Midland, Michigan, and produced by the MCTV Network. For more information on this podcast or to learn more about the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project, visit cityofmidlandmi.gov/corridors.